sorry, it's too easy, but what are you going to do? You got the song right here on the playlist, and you're going to not play it. All right, everybody, it's Ryan Dawson is the next guest on Anti-War Radio today. He lives in Japan. Nowadays, he's an American, though, lives in Japan. He's the proprietor of what's called Anti-Neocons. I think I said it's anti-neocons.com earlier. That was a mistake. It's Rise 2 Cents, R-Y-S, the number 2, cents, not like money, but like in your head, Rise2Cents.com. Welcome to the show, Rye.
Thanks. Perfect intro music there, Scott.
Oh, you like that. Okay, I thought maybe it was too easy, but I got away with it, huh?
I started laughing as soon as I heard the first guitar riff because I knew what it was.
All right, there you go. Well,
yeah, anti-neocons and Rise 2 Cents will both work because they're mirror-type, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, okay, there you go. So I was right when I was wrong earlier.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, great. Hey, listen, I really appreciate you coming on the show. And as you know, I've basically committed, media suicide here in that I let myself get into a fight with the 9/11 kooks. And this is a real problem because it's, in my view, it's not really a matter of arguing the facts or politics. It's into the realm of arguing religion.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, I figure I have reasonable questions, I think, like everybody, all the 9/11 kooks say, too, about 9/11. I really resent all the bogus assertions and leaps to conclusion and you know, completely off-base kind of directions that a lot of this stuff comes from. And to the point where, you know, I have to admit to you, I'm actually racist against 9/11 kooks now. They're like rollerbladers to me. I hate all of them. They're all the same person to me, and they're all the same person who sent me the same bogus argument before. And I have a lot of trouble being just and treating 9/11 kooks as individuals, as they all are. I know, somewhere in the back of my head there. But so, anyway, it's not something that we talk about very much on the show, but you've written about this, and I like the way you write, and I don't necessarily agree with all of what you say, but you're obviously not one of these guys who goes running around screaming about the missile that hit the Pentagon and all this garbage.
I can't stand those people either. I think they might have well intentions, and they tend to be, you know, anti-war folk on our side, so to speak. But I've never seen an issue so tainted with just, garbage, to be frank. I mean, there were a lot of lies about the Iraq War, or prior to that, Iran-Contra. There have been other conspiracies that have come out, but I've never seen anything so poisoned with disinformation as 9/11. You don't hear the same kind of weird theories about the lies about weapons of mass destruction or anything like that like you do about 9/11.
Sure.
I mean, we've pretty much pinned down the cabal and we know who said what. But when it comes to 9/11, you get some really off-the-wall stuff. Illuminati or blaming the Catholics or the Jews or Ashkenazis or whatever. There's all this weird, bizarre stuff. And I think it makes good people like yourself turned off to the whole subject in general, because after you meet too many kooks in a row, you just don't even want to talk about it anymore. And it gives people like myself a really hard time, because I do believe in a 9/11 cover-up, and I've written about it and researched it for a long time, but it's hard to even start talking about the subject because all these kooks have just poisoned the whole issue completely where nobody even wants to listen to it.
Yeah, it's like diving in a pool of muddy water. If you and I somehow working together found the Holy Grail that explained the whole thing and answered every last unanswered question or whatever, still, what would be the point of it? We'd just be throwing ourselves in the camp with a bunch of kooks anyway, and nobody listen to anything else we have to say after that, you know? Seems like.
Yeah, it's really hard, and I use two different names for different work I'm doing, what I do in Russia and what I do in Japan, et cetera, because this issue is so, about 9/11 is so emotional. And my website, Anti-Neocons, isn't really a 9/11 site per se. It's mostly about the Iraq War and our loss of civil liberties, et cetera. 9/11 was just something I wrote about right after it happened, and it kind of left it alone for a while. And then this 9/11 truth movement grew, and I had to deal with these people over and over again. But to me, the Iraq War is far more important than 9/11. I mean, 9/11 killed about 3,000 people. The Iraq War has led to over a million deaths that we know of, and millions of more refugees. That is far worse. And the lies about the Iraq War are actually easier to prove than 9/11. There's a lot of speculation in 9/11, and there's some things you can pin down. But the lies about the Iraq War is already, you know, antiwar.com has done a really good job. You've done a good job, Justin Raimondo, all these writers. It's been done and said. And it's the same individuals anyway. So I would ask the 9/11 truth movement, you know, start putting your energy in that, in the Iraq War, and you're still going to get the same result. We're still going to get these people in trouble. but just the stuff that's going on now, and I'm not going to mention any names, but it's some just disinformation. And just please stop. Just do us a favor and shut up.
Well, you know, I think when it comes to 9/11, there are a few different versions, probably, of what's called the official story. I mean, there is the actual official story, the 9/11 Commission report, etc. Then there's this whole narrative about 9/11 was the cutting edge of this Islamo-fascist movement hell-bent on taking over the world, turning the whole globe green like the Soviets were going to turn the whole thing red. And that's another official story. You know, that's the right-wing talk radio version of September 11th, was that this heralds a new age of conflict with all that is Islam and all that is Eastern and dangerous and scary and brown-skinned and et cetera. And then, you know, another part of the official story, which this is actually more or less where I fall, I think, and this is alluded to at least in one place in the 9/11 Commission report, and that was that this is severe blowback against the United States, that these people, as Michael Scheuer says, they decided that America was already at war against them by way of their governments, and they wanted to drag our guys into their sand trap, recreate Vietnam with Osama bin Laden in the role of Ho Chi Minh. That's the way James Bamford says it. And that makes perfect sense to me. It's pretty obvious at the same time that there's 27 or 28 or whatever blacked out pages of the Congressional Committee report. It's pretty obvious that the 9/11 Commission itself was run by the closest of cronies to the people who at least failed to do their job that day. And from there's so many different directions people can go. I tend to assume that what they're covering up is, well, like Greg Palast said in his initial reports after September 11th, a lot of embarrassing relationships between Republican businessmen and Saudis and probably Pakistanis who, in one degree or another, were involved in this. And this is basically, you know, just a matter of Kevin Bacon game stuff, that they would just rather cover up the whole thing rather than admit that, well, as we know from Sybil Edmonds' story, for example, that high levels of our government participate in nuclear black markets and laundering money and dealing heroin and God knows what all the time.
Well, yeah, I can talk about Sybil in a bit if you want. Part of the reason in the beginning for the cover-up was because they were associating the 9/11 attack to Iraq, to making pre-war propaganda to invade Iraq. And
right.
By they, I mean mainly the Office of the Vice President and the OSP and the Department of Defense, because they had these myths, and you can probably list them in your sleep by now, but they had the Iraqi officials meeting in Prague with Mohammed Atta, the alleged lead hijacker. And Dick Cheney actually said Czechoslovakia instead of the Czech Republic because he's an ignoramus idiot. Then he had, he had Judith Miller, Libby's girl, talking about the mobile weapons lab, which they alluded to making anthrax. And that ended up being bogus as well. But right after the 9/11 attacks, which is something initially that was also blamed on Al-Qaeda, was this anthrax attack. And from the anthrax attack, with the notes, death to Israel, death to America, and so on, then they started talking about the mobile weapons labs and the anthrax, and then Colin Powell gave his speech, which was actually originally written by Lewis Libby, and then they rewrote it. I think Tenet wrote it, but that's kind of like, you know, the pot rewriting the kettle.
Yeah.
A good time's worth the difference there.
Sure.
And so from that anthrax, which they lied about, well, they didn't say it came from Iraq, but they said Iraq was capable of making it. It was going to hit the UK in 45 minutes and yada, yada, and alluded to that. And they did lie about 9/11 by saying the hijackers met in Prague. Now, they could worm their way out of that and say, well, we didn't lie about it. We just made a really big mistake on the intelligence. But they lied about it, and we know because of their other lies. And your forgery is a really concrete one. I mean, you can't forge the signature of the wrong foreign minister on the document that you're basing your intelligence on. I mean, there's no way that's a mistake. That's a conscious lie, and it has to be. And for me, the bigger issue with that I have is, yeah, they lied to the war. They've always done that. They lied about all the wars from the Native Americans to now. But why didn't the press, the mainstream press, I don't mean like antiwar.com, but like, you know, ABC and NBC Fox, why didn't they pick up the Niger story or any of these stories and just run home with it? I mean, that should have been front page. Hey, they lied to us. But it never happened. The only person in the MSN, I'm talking about televised news, not written press, that I ever heard talk about it was Chris Matthews, and it wasn't on his show. It was when he was on a radio show talking to somebody. And he, you know, he admitted he knew about it at least.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing, is people have to realize, like, would they lie to you? Of course. And it's the government. government doesn't lie. Could they lie to you? Yes, they can, because you look at all these stories about the Iraq War, which is a really good example, and it's definite concrete evidence of conscious lies, and yet it's not reported. It is sort of reported in the foreign press and Japanese news, but who's reading that in the U.S.? It's not on TV, and that's where, you know, the basic American works, you know, hard, comes home, doesn't have time to read blogs and find all this and research. It should just be on television and told you it's the news, but it isn't. And actually, the opposite comes out. They covered up for it. They acted as cheerleaders for the war. They gave all the Pentagon talking points, message force multipliers, etc.
Well, I might as well go ahead and ask you outright, what is your view of the inside job theory? You think that there's something to that?
Yeah, it's kind of complicated. It's can't just say they did it. But I think there's a lot of evidence pointing in that direction, kind of a joint operation between the Israeli Mossad and the U.S. government, FBI. I think the Mossad op was actually outsourced by the CIA, who's not allowed to do domestic stuff in the U.S. The evidence, the strongest evidence for that, it would take me a long time to explain, but just in talking points would be Mossad was caught on 9/11 filming the events. They had a back door to all of our telecommunications, and when not all the FBI is bad, you know, they were trying to follow these terrorists around, and they kept moving locations as soon as the Tom Burst and Amdocs scandal. There's a big report on that on Fox News. That got yanked, was removed. And then there was Urban Moving Systems, which had anthrax in their warehouse, and the AIM strain of anthrax came from the United States. It did not come from Al-Qaeda. It was traced back. That's on the History Channel. That's part of the official story, that there was some domestic terrorist that did the anthrax, and it was not Al-Qaeda. And the main suspect there is, and this is speculation, I'm not saying he did it, but I do believe he did it, was a man named Dr. Philip Zack, and he worked in Fort Detrick, Maryland. He had been fired from his laboratory for his racist antics to an Egyptian co-worker, but then he was caught on film entering the lab, on tape, this is on the surveillance tape, going to where the anthrax was and leaving. He was let in by a co-worker, Dr. Ripley, and she let him in. And because these guys wanted to continue researching projects after Gulf War I that we had been terminated, and one of them was anthrax, and that's where the anthrax is missing. That's the guy who was caught on tape going in and out of there. The letters are mailed, they're attributed to Al-Qaeda, they're quickly linked to the Iraq War, and the anthrax is found in the warehouse where the Mossad front was. So that's pretty damning evidence there, but it doesn't really explain what happened, just sort of explains what probably didn't happen.
Yeah. Well, hang on one second. I want to focus on the anthrax thing a little bit. I know I can't verify the part about the anthrax found in the warehouse. I'd never heard that, but I ain't saying you're wrong. I just didn't know that part. But I do know that it was on the front page of the Metro and State section here in the Austin American Statesman that the anthrax was traced all the way back to the dead cow where it came from. There was a rancher in West Texas.
Two anthrax strains for the different letters.
Oh, were they two different ones? Well, at least one of them came from this cow that he turned over, the rancher turned over to Texas A&M, and Texas A&M turned over to the Fort Detrick Laboratory. That was in the Austin American Statesman.
Right. That's true. I don't know about that as well. But there are two different strains. What was sent to the media and what was sent to the politicians was different. And one of the pathologists, I forgot his name, Mullick, he was the deputy director. He's not actually a scientist, but he came out saying that he thought the anthrax had been aerosolized by silica, which is what they supposedly use in Iraq in the mobile lab that didn't exist, the anthrax that didn't exist.
Uh-huh.
He was wrong about that, but he got promoted anyway. Now he's the head director.
Well, now let me ask you, too, about the Mossad following the hijackers around, because we've done quite a bit of talking about that on this show. And, of course, Justin Raimondo and Christopher Ketchum and others have written quite a bit about this.
Yeah, they live right next door to them.
What makes you think, though, that the Israelis were actually the handlers of these hijackers rather than just surveilling them, trying to bust them or stop them or something?
Well, I don't think they wanted to stop them, considering that they were celebrating the attack after the event. And they may have been surveilling them. They may have been shielding them. They wanted it to go forward. I mean, it benefited Israel completely. They had the tapes of the dancing Palestinians on the news that afternoon, already prepackaged on every single channel, the same catchphrases and everything. But they didn't have the tapes of the dancing Israelis who were caught, or the vans that were caught headed toward the tunnel, the Holland Tunnel, George Washington Bridge. There were vans, truck bombs that were caught, and that was on CBS. I have a clip of that, but it quickly was erased. I mean, it never came back on September 12th or 13th. It was not on the news.
I just wanted to say real quick that for people who want to look at that, in the left-hand margin of antiwar.com, there's a permanent link to the Israeli art student files where you can find links to basically all the media that's been done about this.
Right.
But
I read a lot of that myself from antiwar.com, the art student files. I mean, it's scary stuff. I'm afraid to give only part of my 9/11 theory because it wasn't just Israel, and people take that and cherry-pick things and come up with some nasty views. I'm not a fan of Israel. I mean, it's an apartheid police state, but please don't expand that to Jews in general or anything like that. I mean, that's just retarded. But that is what happens a lot, and it's sad. It's like what you were saying around the hour before, the people hating brown people, or the war in Somalia, which is hardly, it's not even mentioned ever. I mean, it really is a forgotten war, and it's sad, and I think people should do what you suggested. You know, corner these people, get it on tape so you can put it on the Internet or something and ask them about it, and watch them just have the jaw drop because they probably don't even know about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet that's right, as sad as that is. And see, this is another thing that bothers me. Like, for us to even talk about this at all, we have to add the official non-anti-Semitic disclaimer thing to explain that this isn't about bigotry at all. We're just talking about facts here. I mean, the truth is that these urban movers were arrested. 200-something Israeli spies were deported from this country after 9/11. They did, as you mentioned, a big four-part series on Fox News about it.
Yeah, I think the spy operation may have been separate. Some of the spy rings, and this has been hinted at by Sybil Edmonds and, what's the guy, Luke, is that his name?
Yeah, Luke Ryan.
They always say, you know, his Turkish friends and other friends, others Israeli. But they're legally not even allowed to say that.
I think also she's talked about the Turkic countries, meaning the pipeline from Afghanistan to Turkey by way of Uzbekistan and those other countries in between there.
Oh, the whole BTC thing. I mean, the American Turkish Council and AIPAC and all these, you know, alphabet soup, whatever, they're not really lobbies for Israel or for Turkey. It's a lobby for the military-industrial complex, and they just use religious conflicts and ethnic strife and whatever they can to generate a conflict because that's a cash cow for them.
Mm-hmm.
The individuals on the American Turkish Council, just the whose list is it? MIC, I hope I don't use too many acronyms. Or the one case, if we can get into Russia, I was going to talk about, is the in Azerbaijan. There is a group called the UACC. It's the U.S. Azerbaijan Chamber of Commerce.
Mm-hmm.
It's formed in 1995. And it's the same people as ATC and all these other groups. You have Kissinger and Baker and Sununu and Richards and Dick Cheney, Richard Pearl. And, of course, the dictator, Ilham Aliyev, his father was the prior president, and he was part of a bloodless coup d'etat, or coup, actually, for Russia. And we get into lukewarm and things, but I don't know if you want to change into
Russia
or get into 9/11 or whatever. I mean, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you know, forget the 9/11 stuff anyway, man.
Let's talk about Russia.
Know,
just come to antineocons.com and just ask. It's a forum. And just ask anyone, where's the 9/11 stuff? There's a big section on it, and just read Rise 9/11 reports. They don't have anything in there about Germanic death cults or anything. Satanic hand signals or Freemasons or anything like that. I'm talking about real people and real events. And all you guys saying that stuff, just stop it.
All right, now, so let's talk about Russia, because I think most people just haven't even paid attention to Russia at all since the end of the Cold War. Like, okay, well, that's the end of that. And yet there's been things happening there every day ever since then. And I was wondering if you could just sort of sum up the presidency of Boris Yeltsin and how America treated Russia at the end of the Cold War and how that's led to the current state of American relations with that country.
Yeah, I think it's a very important issue to understand why did the USSR collapse. You have to know about that economics because we're kind of headed down the same road here. And I'll give you some facts just real fast. When Gorbachev, before Yeltsin, when Gorbachev was there, the Russian ruble went to about 415 to $1, which was pretty bad. After Yeltsin and Yegor Gaidar, the prime minister, got through with Russia, it was 28,000 per dollar. That's the old terrible joke. You want to buy toilet paper or just use the rubles?
Yeah, massive inflation, huh?
And so how does that happen? If you ask most people why the bottom fall out of the ruble, what happened to the Soviet Union, the typical kind of story you'll get is, oh, well, they're in an arms race with Reagan and couldn't keep up and spent too much or something. And that's just not what happened at all. That's a really simple answer. I actually heard that in school, and I was, that doesn't make sense. I'd like to kind of explain quickly the main factors of what brought that down and what's happening now. I mean, it's under Gorbachev, he made a lot of stupid reforms, but Russia was still the third largest economy in the world after the U.S. and Japan. But after the oligarchs got done looting there, on a per capita basis, Russia was poorer than Peru. They lost more people than from World War One, than Russians died in World War One from the looting of Russia. And a lot of people are just like, so they're Russians. They're like, they're not human beings. Like, it doesn't even matter. They don't even count. No sympathy at all. And this is regular people. They lost about 1.7 million in the World War One, and over 3 million people died after the economic collapse, and millions of other people fled the country just to live. I mean, they're literally running out of food. Terrible. And the U.S. just sat back and watched it, knew it was coming, helped orchestrate some of it. It's really sad. There's three main things that helped bring this about, and it started in 1985, and it actually started in Saudi Arabia with Sheikh Ahmed Yamani. I hope I said his name right. But he was part of OPEC, and he decided Saudi Arabia wasn't going to arbitrarily cut production and cut the prices of oil. So they upped production, and the price of oil fell 69% in the world in just 8 months. And that was really devastating for the Soviet Union, because about half of their cash exports were oil and natural gas. That was a blow. Another big one with Gorbachev, and this is a mistake that the United States made too, is the prohibition of alcohol, prohibiting vodka. Because there's a lot of alcoholism. In Russia, it was different because that was state-owned. It was communist, and it was about 25% of the Soviet finance came from alcohol. And when you took that away, it did the same thing that happened in the U.S. It just boosted organized crime, and it made a lot of criminals multimillionaires. And then it caused the ruble overhang, and it just kept sliding from there. You know, then they're trying to solve the ruble overhang. They raised taxes. The businesses are unhappy with that, so they went underground, went black market, and that bolstered the power of the mafia more, because the only way to get the off-the-book contract to stick is to use gunmen, which they did, a lot of that. There was a big war in 1993 and 4 called the Mob War. You know, the Chechens and these Slavic gangs and everybody fighting, and that's still present today, but people really don't understand the history. They think, oh, they're just refugees, so they just naturally want to die and kill each other. That's nonsense. The mob was increased by the state policies. Cutting vodka and was huge.
Well, now,
25% of your revenue is huge.
Well, now they had this shock therapy thing too, right? Which was, rather than, you know, I don't know, selling shares in a way that the people of Russia could, you know, end up owning shares in what used to be supposedly owned by the people by way of their communist state. They just basically turned over all of the Soviet industries to this guy, and this guy, KGB-connected former Soviet apparatchiks and so forth. And they got to just basically take the money and run. They left husks of industries behind and just took the money and got out.
That's when it really gets bad under Yeltsin and Yegor Gaidar. And there was a voucher scam, and there was something called a loans for shares scam. And what that was in about 1995. And they said the banks would loan cash to the cash-strapped government, about, you know, $2 billion or whatever, in return for stakes in big industries. So they were going to have an auction. And then after the banks bought stakes in industries, they'd privatize and they'd have, you know, venture capitalists come in and have a regular auction. But that's not what went down at all. What happened instead was, and I'll give you specifics, Khodorkovsky, who's now in jail, he's one of the oligarchs, he was a protege of Mark Rich, I'm getting him later, he wanted Yukos Oil, really famous right now. It was Russia's second largest oil company. And Khodorkovsky ran a bank called Minatep. And in the bidding process, the institution in charge of registering applicants for the bidding process was Minitep. So, of course, he just rejected bids for whatever reason from other banks and ended up with UCOS himself for just $9 million more than the opening price. And $9 million for the second largest oil company in Russia, who at the time was the second largest. It had almost as much oil as Saudi Arabia. It's completely insane. And then Vladimir Putin did the same kind of scam. He used Omnix Bank to win 51% shares in Sudanco and Nordisk, which is a metal company dealing in nickel and aluminum, things like that. The opening bid was $170 million, and he paid $170.1 million. Same scam. He just wouldn't register the competition. And then we have Boris Berezovsky, and he's the oligarch of oligarchs, in my opinion. He got 51% of Sibneft. Its starting price was $100 million, and he didn't have the bank. He didn't own the bank that was buying it. The Income Bank offered $175 million to Boris's $100.3 million. But suddenly, on the day, the next day of the auction, guy walks in the room, puts down a fax, withdraws his bid. Just, you know, he just made the bid the day before, and he comes in and says, I'm withdrawing it. So evidently he made him an offer he couldn't refuse. Boris Berezovsky is dealing with Chechen terrorists and everything else. But then you can't just have no bid. You have to have at least two companies, two banks bidding. You can't have just like a no-bid contract like we do in Iraq. So Khodorkovsky comes in with Minitep again. He bids 100.1. Boris bids 100.3 and ends up with Sibneft for $300,000 above the opening price. I mean, that completely robbed these industries, and they didn't even allow foreign bidders at all. It was illegal. Couldn't do it. And that would have really driven the price up.
Yeah, so basically what you had was the entire former Soviet economy, such as it was, at the end of the Soviet Union, just completely raped from within. And
yeah, all these guys had connections to Yeltsin, too. I mean,
and now, so what's the role of Putin? Because, you know, from the outside, Yeltsin picked Putin and then gave him a war and made him a star and then resigned on New Year's Day at the turn of the millennium and handed the power over to him a couple few months before the election. Was that a coup d'etat? And how different is Putin's policy? You said he's a gangster, too, but he's fighting with these other gangsters?
He's a gangster. It happens that his interests overlap with the interests of Russia in general. So you're kind of doing the right thing for the wrong reason. Putin double-crossed him. He played the role that he needed to play as ex-KGB, and he went in. Yeltsin at this time been in and out of the hospital for like a year. He was done. And rather than having the election, he transferred power to Putin, you know, midway, so that he would already be the current president before the election, which, of course, being an incumbent gives you a massive advantage.
Mm-hmm.
But Putin played him, basically. I mean, he got in, and once he got power, then he turned on the oligarchs. He's the man that arrested Khodorkovsky, who's sitting in jail right now, and most of the rest of them fled the country. About 70% of the oligarchs, 7 out of 10, have Israeli passports. Because they were Jewish, they used that loophole of dual citizenship to get out and not be extradited back to Russia. So Boris Berezovsky right now, he can only go to the United Kingdom and Israel. And if his plane touches down anywhere else, he'll be arrested on the spot.
Mm-hmm. And now this is the guy who was best friends and then PR champion of Litvinenko, the guy who Putin murdered with plutonium poison or something, right?
Now, what a ridiculous story. I mean, I'm reading this, and I'm reading all these journalists and things writing about us. I'm like, what if a little kid could kind of look at this and say, well, why didn't you just shoot him? You know, what is the motive or the rationality to use a $10 million or around $11 million radioactive, easily traceable poison to get rid of some low-level schmuck who he blamed the London bombings on Putin. I mean, he blamed everything on Putin. Someone got killed, it was Putin, you know. But he worked for Boris Berezovsky, and I'll get the point, who I think the poison did later, but that wasn't the first time that Boris concocted a massive conspiracy against himself. You know, the plutonium poison was found in Boris's offices and residence, traces of it. So everywhere the oligarchs went, the poison seemed to follow. And I don't think the oligarchs would poison him either for the same reasons. It's just stupid if they wanted to kill him. They just throw them out a window, stab them, shoot them, whatever. You don't use polonium.
More so likely an accident, a smuggling operation or something.
I mean, it had to be. Well, it doesn't have to be, but that is the most logical conclusion, because neither side is so stupid to do that. So, but the bigger question is, then, why the heck was he bringing in radioactive material to the UK anyway? What are they planning? It's not easy to get hold of.
Yeah, interesting question. Now,
you mean dirty bomb, or what are they trying to, what are they trying to cook up? So, but, you know, he's an ally of his Chechen terrorist, and I'm not painting it like Russia's good and Chechnya is bad. I'm just saying they're both bad, but they do terrorist tactics. That's why I call them terrorists.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, you mentioned the pipeline thing, and you know all the acronyms for them and everything, but I know a big part of this is, I guess it used to be the great game fighting over spice routes and so forth, and now it's fighting over the oil in the Caspian Basin and which pipelines are going to go which directions, and this is why America is trying so hard, it seems like, to encircle Russia with military bases, and they've expanded NATO right up to the door of Russia. And in fact, you know, when you mentioned that this is all about the military-industrial complex, that guy Bruce Jackson from Lockheed, who created the, I forgot the name of it, the Iraq Pressure Group, that came up with all the propaganda about, oh, Saddam gassed his own people and all that for the run-up to the Iraq War, he was basically just copying his own blueprint from when he set up a commission in the 1990s to justify expanding NATO into Eastern Europe so that Lockheed could get all those welfare dollars arming all the former Warsaw Pact states. But so now we have them basically encircled.
Well, they have overlapping interests with the Israelis. Because, I mean, if you go to the Odin-Yenin plan from 1979 and then redone in 1982, it explicitly explained the need for war with Iraq, what would happen afterward, dividing it along ethnic lines, making a Kurdistan in the north. I mean, verbatim. You looked at it. I'll give you a link to that. It's worse than PNAC. It's the precursor to PNAC. It's worse than that. And it spells it out exactly what they wanted to do. And it isn't just, people need to understand what Israel is. I think it's for Israeli interests. It's not just for the Zionist bigot that dream of greater Israel and all the religious rhetoric. It is a massive cash cow for the military-industrial complex. And the reason the crazies are always promoted and helped to stay in power there is because it caused a massive arms race in the Middle East. And when Russia was balancer, that was an indirect way to fuck with the Middle East, was through Israel. Those are, sorry I said that word, but that was how we mess with them. And that's what that is. But those plans go back, and there's a lot of Israeli policy papers on that. But in a way, they're all policy papers for the MIC.
Mm-hmm.
But I can give you a good example on how it is when you're talking about Lockheed. That's a big one as well. In Azerbaijan, they wanted a pipeline to go through. I'll skip over Lukoil and all that, but they wanted a pipeline through Azerbaijan for a long time and up through Georgia. So they had the Rose Revolution in Georgia, kicked a Chevy out and put a Nino in there. And her first act was calling up British Petroleum and saying, hey, pipeline's, you know, good. But in Azerbaijan, they had a problem because, first of all, Congress already had banned military aid to Azerbaijan, which is how we usually instigate stuff. And that was from 1992. And that was over their conflicts with Armenia and a lot of nasty stuff. So we didn't do that. But George Bush comes to power, but George Bush Jr., in 2002. And he just sort of got rid of that somehow, waived it or whatever, and said, we're going to send it, and it's for the war on terrorism, whatever. And he wanted to put in a Caspian Guard. And he named it the Caspian Guard. So how is the Caspian Guard fighting terrorists? Caspian is Caspian Sea, where the oil is and where they wanted the pipe from. But then Azerbaijan made its own law blocking foreign troops on its soil. How about that? It can't waive our law, right? So they sent in the mercenaries. Blackwater goes in there. Technically, semantically, they're not foreign troops. They're bodyguards and contractors and trainers. And they just, that was a back door. That was a way of getting a military presence in there anyway and avoiding the law. Slick. So they do a lot of that. Just being, oh, he's not a prisoner of war, he's an enemy combatant, torture him.
Yeah.
Not subject to the Geneva Conventions because it wasn't war. They just changed the names around and bend the law. And that, you know, where is our Supreme Court? Where are they? So many unconstitutional things, and you can get really mad at the Bush administration and the Congress, et cetera, but it's the court's job to rule things unconstitutional and say, hey, can't do it. I mean, we basically don't have a court. That's been nothing. And there's a million things you could list off. domestic spying, torturing, retroactive pardons. Can't do any of that stuff. Not even supposed to have undeclared war.
Well, yeah, I think it's been quite a while since the Constitution was, you know, anything like the law around here. Although certain parts of it are enforced from time to time, but, you know, not for the most part. Mostly, all it says is that this government can't exist. And then dot, dot, dot at the end, whatever you call that, where they can, you know, fill in the rest of the sentence however they like. But so now we got this missile defense thing going in Eastern Europe, and they're calling it, you know, defense from Iranian missiles, which is just a joke. I don't think anybody in the world believes that besides the president himself, if even him.
I don't think he believes it. Like, all this rhetoric about Iran, and they keep saying they could have a nuclear bomb, blah, blah, blah. I don't think this is stupid and delusional that they really believe any of that. They're just saying it because they want a pretext. Cheney and all, they know that is crap. They knew it was bogus the first time they used these lies in Iraq. They knew the whole time. They knew now. They knew what a disaster the Iraq war would be. People say they made big mistakes and look at the quagmire. They wanted a quagmire. Low-level conflict was the plan. That's how you keep generating money into the Halliburtons and KBR and Lockheed, Boeing, etc. The whole MIC, that is the goal. They don't care about the United States. They don't care how bad the debt is, what's happening to the dollar, because they're enriching themselves. It's their plan. I don't think I think Bush is stupid, but I don't think he's so dumb to believe in all that. Maybe he is. Bush is kind of a good question mark, because he's he blew his mind out with coke a long time ago.
All right, well, so what do you think is going to be the future of American-Russian relations, say, for example, under a Barack Obama administration?
Oh, it won't matter. Barack Obama's is almost a clone of McCain voting-wise. I mean, the rhetoric's all the same, but you look at, you know, he voted to fund the war. He voted to reinstate the Patriot Act. He voted, like, just all the negative stuff. That guy is just all mouth. I don't like the whole two-party paradigm. I mean, I like a few politicians. I love Ron Paul. I like, there's the select few, but it won't be really any different. Obama is, he is slightly better than John McCain, but so is an animal. I mean,
yeah.
he's got
Madeleine Albright and all the people who presided over all what he described in the 90s on his team.
He's scum, and I can't believe people have fallen for this again. It's the same trap with Kerry. You know, I was the guy that exposed Kerry's on the armor procurement. Why they don't have the best armor in Iraq?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew about the armor, but I didn't know that you were the one who had broken that story. That's good.
That guy.
Yep. I'm sorry, we're all out of time. I got more questions for you, but we don't have any more time for them. So I'm going to go ahead and let you go. But I really appreciate you coming on the show today, Ryan.
Come on the forum sometime, and forgot to plug my book.
Plug it right now. Screw it. Go ahead.
Well, I wrote Welcome to the USSA, and it goes into detail. And then I got another book, which I'm writing, called History from the Losing Side. And then it goes Russia, American Civil War, American Indians, all the losing sides, Japan. Talks about what you probably didn't hear in history class.
Huh. Wow, that sounds very interesting, man. I can't wait to see that thing published. All right, everybody, that's Ryan Dawson from antineocons.com. Thanks very much for your time today.
Thanks, Scott. Japanese for goodbye. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, Japanese thing. Yeah, I missed it. Sorry. Hey, thanks a lot, man.
I don't. Bye-bye.
After a truckload of explosives was discovered around the George Washington Bridge. That bridge links New York to New Jersey over the Hudson River. Whether the discovery of those explosives had anything to do with other events of the day is unclear, but the FBI has two suspects in hand, said the truck load of explosives, enough explosives were in the truck to do great damage to the George Washington Bridge. But they are